We're recording. All right. Good evening and welcome. I'm John Sheehan, President of the Delaware State Board of Education. I call the June 18th regular meeting to order. It is 5 o'clock p.m. This meeting is open to the public in the Townsend Building and electronically via Zoom. The State Board of Education published the public meeting notice and meeting information on June 11th on the State Public Meeting Calendar websites. Thank you for your patience if we run into any technology issues as we simultaneously conduct this meeting in person and electronically. Today's agenda contains two opportunities for public comment. There is time allotted for public comment on regulations and then for general public comment at the end of the meeting. Sign-up sheets are available on the table by the door if you did not previously sign up to provide public comment via email and are logged in through the URL. Please type your name, organization, and comment topic in the chat box now. If you've joined through the call-in option and wish to make verbal public comment, please log in online through the meeting URL. As required by statute, this meeting is being recorded, and the recording will be available on our website within 7 business days of this meeting. When voting on items for action, I will ask all those in favor say aye, and we'll do a roll call only if there is a dissent. As a reminder, when speaking or making a motion, please state your name. We'll move on to item B, roll call of the State Board members. Before we take roll this evening, I want to thank Administrative Assistants Erin French and Peggy Anderson for assisting us this evening. Ms. French, could you please do a roll call of the State Board members?
Reverend Banks?
Here.
Dr. Griffin?
Here.
Mr. Gunter?
Present.
Dr. Marinucci?
Here.
Mr. Sheehan?
Present.
Ms. Stevens?
Present.
Dr. Zabel?
Present.
All right, we have quorum. I will also note that we have the board's executive secretary, Secretary of Education Cindy Martin, and Deputy Attorney General Alex Corbin, along with State Board staff Erin French, participating in today's meeting. Hello, Secretary Martin. We'll move on to item C, the approval of the agenda. The board's agenda was posted on June 11th. Ms. French, are there any changes to the agenda? Any changes to the agenda? Okay.
Mr. Chair,
Yes.
point of order.
Yeah.
I don't know how I got skipped in the roll call.
That's
I've changed my name to Skip Simmons instead of Jim.
it. Mr. Simmons.
Present.
All right, we have a quorum and we are ready to rock and roll. On to item C, approval of the agenda. The board's agenda is posted on June 11th. Ms. French noted there are no changes to the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting as presented?
Griffin, so moved.
A motion by Dr. Griffin. Is there a second?
Thanks, second.
Second by Reverend Banks. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. On to item D, approval of the May 21st regular meeting minutes. The May 21st meeting minutes were provided to the board for review in advance of this meeting. I believe there are some additions to the minutes.
Yes, I found a few items that are in need of correction. First of all, in the others present section, if our administrative assistant would include her name here as well, because she was present, normal practice has been to have the administrative assistant for SBE listed there. Another item, we had two Roman numeral threes under charter schools and regulations. Charter schools would remain Roman numeral three, regulations should become Roman numeral four. And then going to page four, under the appeal sections, that Roman numeral eight in the student appeal 2026-05, where it says the morion, it should be the motion carried. Six yes, two zero no. So those three corrections to be made in the minutes.
Are there any other edits to the minutes noted by board members? Great. Alex, I believe we can make a motion to approve the minutes as amended. Okay. Is there a motion to approve the May 21st regular meeting minutes as amended with those three changes?
So moved.
So moved.
Thank Vice President Stephen beat you. Motion by Vice President
I'm just trying to
Stephen.
get on the record.
Yeah.
Second, Simmons.
And second by Board Member Simmons. Any discussion on the minutes? All right. All those in favor of the amended minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. We'll move next up to a presentation, a bittersweet presentation. We're going to hear from our student member, Tyler Gunter, in the later part of the meeting for his final presentation. But before we get there, we have a plaque to present to you, and I was hoping that we could just go around. I know some of us have gotten to work with you longer than others, but we will present you this and take a group picture, but I just wanted to start by saying how impressed I've been with your dedication and your focus on really lifting up student voice. I think the purpose, I was here within the governor's office when the state board was amended to include a student member, and I would imagine that the legislators who did that envisioned someone just like you who goes to schools, brings student voice to conversation, is professional, diligent, and I know you're going to do great things, and please don't forget about us when you go do those great things. But I just wanted to say a huge thank you, Tyler, and congratulations on a job extraordinarily well done. I'll open it up to other members if anyone else wants to add.
Well, I'd also like to add, Tyler, it's been my great pleasure to work with you both here during our regular board meetings, but also to get to travel with you on occasion to your building visits. And I've been struck by your poise, your professionalism, and your ability to connect with your peers. You are extremely, extremely well-read, well-researched, and when I look to you, I just get excited to think that there are going to be people like you continuing on and hopefully putting such a great face on the face of education. I know you're going to do great things, and I hope you stay in touch with us because I want to hear what you're doing while you're in college and beyond. So good luck, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would echo that. You are like the prime example of the potential that Delaware's education system can produce. And your leadership at your young age, I can only imagine where you're going to end up.
Else before we go into the presentation?
Well, as a new board member, I've only participated in two meetings with you, and you're such an encouragement to me and an inspiration. God has great plans for you, man, and I look forward to hearing what the Lord has for you.
Very much.
You're welcome.
Yep, I'll try to keep mine short. I spoke a couple of months ago to you, and when you shared with us what your plans were after high school graduation, and like everyone else said, Tyler, I look forward to hearing what happens in your 4 years down at what is now our home by the sea, Hampton University, and then beyond. I'm grateful for the sobriety that you had in your approach to the position. You could have just come every month and let whatever happened here be the end all and be all to being a student representative. But you took representing the voice of Delaware students on this board very seriously, quite frankly, setting a bar for whoever comes behind you. So thank you for the way you approach your role.
Thank you.
I'll say ditto to what everyone has said, but I've ended with job well done. I think it's important for you to hear that your job was well done, right? Like student voice is important, and someone could have done that and not have done it well. So I'll reiterate it again, job well done. Good luck in the future.
Thank you. Before we move on, we have a little something to present to you. And so on behalf of the board, we have both this certificate and this plaque as well. And I was hoping we could do a board picture as well. Where in the past, for those who've been on the board, where have we done that? Is it over
The
here?
stairs down the hall.
On the stairs.
Okay.
Yeah.
We should do a mid-meeting. Have we done that?
Yeah, we can just do it over here, right in front of
Okay.
the
In front of the
so
state board.
right, so right here.
Yeah.
In front of the state board. Okay.
We can do it anywhere we want. Listen, we can do it anywhere you want. You're the president.
I like
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do the stairs since we don't want the Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it could create a bunch of problems, so it's better just to avoid it. Great. As I mentioned, Tyler's gonna have his final student presentation towards the end of the meeting. So we will move along to item three, charter schools. We have Leroy Travers, the director of the charter school office, with us virtually to provide updates on the work of the charter school office. Mr. Travers, thank you so much for your written report. Any other updates to share with the board?
Good evening, everyone. First of all, I just want to apologize for not being there in person, as that is my preference, and specifically apologize for missing Tyler's final meeting in person. Luckily, several weeks ago, I was able to speak to Tyler in person at the charter rally and express my just wonder and amazement as at what he's been able to accomplish as a student member of the board. And I'm just really excited as I'm long gone from this space, just excited to watch his career and see the impact that he has on children, adults, et cetera, through his work. So thank you, Tyler, so much. Outside of that, no updates to my report. I did want to thank you, send a large amount of gratitude to Ms. Stevens for volunteering to serve on the Charter School Accountability Committee for Eastside Charter School, for their major modification. The attention to detail that she showed at the beginning of the meeting with the agenda is exactly why we love having her on the committee, among other reasons. But thank you, Ms. Stevens, for volunteering to do that. And just to keep forward the offer and the opportunity to provide a technical assistance session on the Charter School Accountability Committee to the entire State Board at some point. I think it would be great for the board, specifically those who have not had the chance to serve on the committee, and for the public, just to see the inner workings of the way in which a charter school accountability committee works. And with that, I'm ready for questions.
We'll take you up on that. We'll have a conversation support, whether it's August, September, October. I think it's a good idea to have a presentation. Can I ask you, Leroy, just one question? You've submitted an update on how things are going with BASE. Can you just provide a little more sort of detail? Is we've checked in, I think, every month just to make sure that students are being placed and the support from your office is continuing. So
Yep.
if there's anything else you can share, just would be curious.
Sure thing. So we're basically 12 days away from their final official day. We're scheduled next week and again the following week to be on site to pick up supplies, pick up student records, things like that. Again, I think I shared, students right now are working with the team from BASE, the team that they're comfortable with, through the 30th. And then anyone that's not been enrolled in a district or a school of choice by the 30th, those records will come to our office, and our office will reach out directly to those parents and have conversations with them to make sure that they are enrolled in the proper school or district. So, conversations are ongoing via email.
You froze if you can hear us. All right, you're back. Sorry, you froze the last about 10 seconds.
I'm sorry. So I was just saying that conversations have been ongoing almost daily via email between the department and the school. They've been virtual. We've been meeting virtually, and we have, as I said, we have on-site meetings scheduled next week and the following week, and we'll be there as much as needed, really, over the next 10 to 12 days.
Other questions from board members?
Just point of clarity, Leroy, you mentioned those students who aren't assigned, their records would come to you, but wouldn't they go to their feeder pattern school unless they got in somewhere else or no?
Not necessarily. So
Okay.
we have to make sure that that student is enrolled. And if get enrolled, a request for records comes in to the school or eventually our office. If a request for records doesn't come in, that doesn't necessarily guarantee enrolled. So we can't just assume that they're going through their feeder pattern. It could be that a parent says, I'm just not going to enroll my student. We can't allow that to happen. So we have to keep possession of those records until we get a request for records. That's how in Delaware, that's how we track students, that request for records, to make sure that every student is in fact enrolled and not just kind of lost out there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you. I just need a point of clarity.
Sure.
Other questions from board members? All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Travers.
Thank you guys. Have a great evening.
Yep, you too. We'll move on to item four on the agenda, regulations. We'll start with 4A, Professional Standards Board Regulations for Discussion or Action. Tonight we have Dr. Linnea Bradshaw, Executive Director of the Professional Standards Board. She will review two regulations for action, Dr. Bradshaw.
Thank you. The first regulation is a 1520 early childhood teacher. This regulation was published on May 1st. It received no comments. The most substantive change is the removal of the praxis requirement with the early childhood team deemed not to be applicable. Are there questions?
You want to move on to regulation two, number two, 15-7.
Are you voting on them together? I'm sorry, or separately?
We've usually, at past few meetings, voted on them together.
Okay, that's great. That's fine. And then 1570, early childhood teacher, or the early childhood exceptional children special education teacher. That was also published May 1. It also received no comment. The main substantive change for that regulation is that we did add a praxis to this one, the early childhood exceptional, which was praxis test, which was deemed to be more applicable to the certificate than the early childhood praxis. So that we've shifted tests from one regulation to the other.
Questions for Dr. Bradshaw on regulation 1570. Seeing none, is there a motion regarding regulations 1520 and 1570?
Griffin, I move the adoption of both regulations 1520 and 1570 as presented.
Motion by Dr. Griffin. Is there a second?
Marinucci second.
Second by Dr. Marinucci. Any further discussion on the regulations? All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. All right, thank you, Dr. Bradshaw. We will move on to item B, the Delaware Department of Education regulations for discussion or action. We would like to welcome Dr. Alyssa Moore, Dr. Michael Feldman, and Maureen Whalen. They will present and review one regulation for information. Good evening.
Good evening. All right, we can go ahead to the next slide. So we're happy to come back to see all of you today. We're going to talk about Regulation 505 and some changes. We wanted to start just by giving a quick little overview of the public comments that had come up since the last time we were here. So just a quick summary. There was comment around general support for financial literacy as a graduation requirement. However, there were concerns regarding implementation flexibility and alignment with legislative intent and impacts on scheduling, course sequencing, and social studies offerings. There were also requests for clarification of graduation requirements and adult education provisions and recommendations related to accessibility, fraud prevention, and online safety for students with disabilities. Go ahead to the next one. Thank you. So when we received all of those public comments, we did do a review of all of them to look at them closely. We had some internal collaboration across teams and work groups at the department. We did a review of the financial literacy legislation and then engaged with DOE leadership and had consultation with our DOE DAG. And then the edits were developed after that to 505.
So I'm going to speak about the edits. So in response to public comment, the department made two clarifying changes regarding the section pertaining to financial literacy and Regulation 505. The first is we added language to make clear that the required half credit in financial literacy is completed within the existing 24 credit minimum state requirement. It does not increase the total number of credits needed for graduation. That was across several public comments. The second is that we revised Section 7.3.5 to clarify the flexibility that the legislation provides by explaining how districts and charters can meet the requirements either through a standalone half credit financial literacy course aligned to our state's adopted financial literacy credits within the existing credit requirements. Right? And then the second option is how they can satisfy that through a one credit course that is aligned to both the social studies credits and the financial literacy credits. Those two options were explicitly in the legislation, and so we added further clarification based on the public comment to lay that out in the regulation.
All righty. All right. First of all, we offered a definition of adult education. Alrighty, and we clarified it by saying that the adult education is neither a local educational agency, nor is it a charter. So it kind of leaves us in the middle of trying to figure out exactly what we are. But the James H. Groves Adult High School does not offer courses based on school years, and that's where you'll see where some of the edits are. Because what happens is, in order to get into Groves, you can be 16 or over and not attached to a local high school. So I just finished up my graduations, and my oldest student this year so far was 64. Secretary, you were there at that. There you go. All right. So you can see we're not talking freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year anymore. And depending on what year they graduated from high school, they've got different graduation requirements anyway. So we're running under four different graduation requirements at this point. So we just made it clear that they would take the courses when they needed them and based on what was missing from their transcript. So we don't use those designations for the different years. Alrighty. The other thing is that we did clarify that Grove students are not required to complete a 1.0 credit in physical education because there is no age limit for enrollment. I'm not sure I'm asking the 64-year-old to do any somersaults, right? Number one. Number two, I will end up saying that we are in somebody else's building and we don't always have the gym to be able to use anything or do any kind of physical fitness with. So what we do is we have a 0.5 health course that everybody must complete. And then the 0.5 that was left over from that one credit becomes an elective that you have to have. So our students still have to have their 24 credits in order to graduate. Alrighty, and in 7.2.3, it is much the same way as what I had talked about in 5.1.4. We're not basing it on senior year. We're basing it on when it is that you need it and whatever the gaps in your transcript were. Anybody have any questions? Yes.
So first, I'll start by commending you on the revisions made to this entire regulation. This looks a lot better than presented last time. However, after speaking to a constituent and for the research, also speaking with the department itself, I still have concerns regarding this regulation. As you know, our finance, marketing, and business pathway students are participating in courses that already cover these content areas. But under the current regulation's language, they are then forced to go take another course because it is not housed in the social studies department. So how do we go about this particular issue and moving forward?
Sure. So the requirement of the legislation is that the half credit is achieved in a course aligned to our financial literacy standards. So there's a personal finance standards. So this debate for this legislation took place over three legislative sessions, right? And so there have been a lot of clarifying conversations about this. And some of the clarifying conversations have been the difference between business and marketing and finance and personal finance. And if you do a crosswalk between our state's financial literacy / personal finance standards and a business and marketing course, there's some commonalities in language maybe or terms, but not the same learning objectives. And so part of our response to developing, or part of our process of developing comments to, or response to public comments, pardon me, was talking to our CTE folks here at the department and looking at course descriptions of those CTE classes and trying to identify connections, right? Because we don't want to add an additional burden into a student's schedule, but we want to make sure that the course is aligned to the learning objectives in those standards, and a business and marketing course doesn't achieve.
I'm still concerned about the scheduling with our CTE and our pathways all having to be one credit sequential classes. And now we have this half credit. I'm concerned the burden it's going to put on buildings to find this half credit And I think it's relatively easy for our students who matriculate through smoothly, but for those others, I think it becomes a concern. Where are they going to put this credit? If I'm a freshman who struggles and now I'm trying to catch up, I need those spots. And what am I going to attach to the back half of a half a credit? I'm just concerned with what that does, because if they mess up in a pathway, in theory, they have 4 years to get the three sequential classes, right? And so since this doesn't align with a pathway class pathway, I'm just concerned that the burden it's going to put on high schools when they do scheduling.
I think part of the reason why the legislation provides that flexibility is so that there's the option for the half credit that would come out of that
Three and a half.
three and a half bank of elective credits, but there's also the option to combine it with social studies and have it be a one credit course. So schools and districts and charters can have both options to try to work out with that. I think that's why those pieces were built into the legislation. I wasn't in the work as
Yeah, I
much
could
as
see.
Mike was
Yeah.
over those three legislative sessions, but that seems to be the intent of why that flexibility and why all those conversations
Yeah,
happened.
and that did come up when school leaders spoke at a variety of different House and Senate committee meetings. We responded to that in public comment, saying that any additional graduation requirement is going to require some adjustment, right? Something that came up during the debates around this was the 24 credit minimum is based around the traditional schedule years ago of seven classes, right? But with schools now going with block scheduling, students have many more credit opportunities beyond just 24 classes, right? But again, right, it's still an adjustment, right? And we feel like we feel that adjustment. One thing that I will say is this is the only graduation requirement that has any flexibility. Every other graduation requirement is, if it's an ELA class, it has to align to ELA standards, end of story, right? Same with math, so all the others, right?
Yeah, no, I think I'll reiterate what Tyler said. I do appreciate the effort that went into addressing it. I just think that addressing it on paper and dealing with it in person is a huge burden if you've ever made a master schedule, because like the I'm going to say 24 because that's basically a class size. Those 24 people don't have the same other seven and a half classes, right? And so trying to create sections for this class, I just think that we are unintentionally putting a burden on buildings in order to get this approved in this manner. So I just.
We won't leave them hanging out on their own, out on a ledge. If a district or charter needs support, the department will provide TA and will absolutely provide assistance and step in to help if they're stuck trying to figure out what that can look like. So that support will be available.
Appreciate it. So my question would be general, because I mean, technically the horse is already out of the barn. If these kinds of issues came up during the legislative hearings, how did the General Assembly perceive that they addressed those concerns in the legislation? I know it's a loaded question.
Yeah, right. And also, you're asking a member of the department, a
Right.
separate branch, right?
Right, absolutely.
So I think they did take them into consideration. I think that that's evidenced by the fact that it took multiple sessions, right, to get accomplished. I think in the end, they felt that financial literacy was such an important requirement that they were going to figure out a way to do it. And this was a version of the bill that gave LEAs some flexibility in that process.
Got one question. Having sat in on a number of meetings with district leadership when the legislation was first being considered and scheduling came up time and time again as the biggest obstacle for this and districts not knowing how they would fit in a half credit somewhere. Have you, in putting this together, reached out to the districts to get their feedback prior to making the corrections that you made? I noticed that in the PowerPoint you indicated that you were responding to the public comment that we heard at that first meeting, but I'm wondering, beyond just responding to that public comment, were you able to reach out to districts beyond those people that commented to get their thoughts on, is this workable? Because I'm wondering, are we going to see hordes of people at the next meeting when this comes to us for action saying, this isn't going to work?
Yeah, so I monthly we have a socialized coalition meeting, and traditionally that's where my one avenue as a socialized ed associate that I talk to district and charter school leads through that. I will say also that the superintendents, the sponsor of the bill, Representative Pulaski, engaged the superintendents throughout the process, and they were intimately involved in this. They insisted on flexibility. One, that they didn't want the minimum credit to be raised, and they wanted some flexibility. I understood the requirements of standards. They acknowledged that some districts had already been implementing it in social studies, right? But and then they wanted the flexibility of having it as a standalone. So they were engaged throughout that process as well.
So my next one is a process question, and it's probably for our DAG. If the General Assembly has already passed this and it has come to us and it will come to us now for action, I'm hearing that not only are there some unsettled thoughts on the part of students, but I'm hearing that districts are wondering what they're going to ultimately have in their lap as pertains to this. And then I'm leaning on a 30 plus year educator who was leading a building about that as well. If this comes, so when this comes to us for action, and say this board does not have the votes and this passes, then what happens next? The department, what happens to this regulation if this board does not affirm?
Well, the department would have to go back and figure out a way to edit the regulation to allow it to address the concerns of this board so it will pass. The department's hands are somewhat tied because if the legislature said, you need to figure out a way to do this, we can't just say, oh, well, it didn't pass the State Board of Education, too bad. We need to figure out a way to do it. So that's the short answer, exactly what it's going to look like. Of course, I can't speak to that, but it would probably require the department to go back and figure out, you know, okay, what are the concerns here? Why isn't the State Board of Education on board with this? What are your stated concerns of the constituents, and then they would take that information and try to develop a regulation that not only complies with the regulation, but satisfies the concerns of this board.
So for the record, this is Meredith Griffin speaking. That's the part of it that concerns me. And this is not the department, but it's the process that gets it here. And this is, again, this is Meredith Griffin's opinion as a single member of the board. Although it took three legislative sessions, part of me as I sit here and I listen to what concerns are still out there for the community that will be charged to do what a member of the General Assembly thought was in the best interest of all Delaware students. My question, and again, this is not a question I'm asking to anyone here in particular, is how do we get here without the wholesale buy-in of those folk who are going to have to do it ultimately? That's not your question. That's not anybody's question. Mm-hmm. That was Meredith Griffin saying it for the record so that folk know. Meredith Griffin said that for the record, not the State Board of Education. It concerns, it does, that now if this board says no, that those who did their due diligence over three legislative sessions to come up with this, we're still going to send it back to the department to figure it out. And my question is, figure it out by doing what? If they've done everything they've done to bring it to this point, we say no and send it back. What do they do? Because the point is, it's the law now. So it has to happen.
But keep in mind that the regulation giving more information to the districts on how to implement the law isn't written in stone. So it could be a situation where there may be reservations, but it gets approved. I mean, not speaking for any board member, but the board feels that, okay, we can see approving this with maybe a little bit of reservation. And then once it gets to the districts and they actually start getting their hands on this, trying to implement these things, they might realize our concerns may have been overblown and we can implement this a little bit easier than we originally thought. Or they may be coming back saying,
We still have serious concerns about this, which the department will take into consideration, and they may be before you again looking at edits to those regulations, or it may be a situation where we're supporting the community and going back to the legislature to say, hey, we tried this and our communities are struggling and we can't figure out a way to do this. We need to go back to the drawing board. So there are ways to address it. There's no quick way to address it in that scenario, but I just want to try to satisfy some of the concerns of the board in saying that there's growing pains to things like this, and I don't think I'm saying anything that no one's aware of. So I think it's a situation where caution is understandable, but to throw up a complete roadblock based off of concerns that may be overblown or may be able to be addressed through technical assistance or further support from the department is something that the board should keep in mind.
That's the piece I needed to hear. I didn't want to walk away and this comes back for action. And I feel like my decision is shoehorning something into the districts that just is not going to fit. So that helps me. Thank you.
I have two questions. Going back to the part of other courses within other departments being able to fulfill this requirement, when this was looked at, was it directly looked at each course within our finance academy, our standardized courses that students are taking, the content of the courses, and then matching it up to does it meet the requirements for this regulation?
During the legislative process, yes, but the legislature specific or the bill specifically says as a standalone financial literacy course or a social studies course. So we're bound by the restrictions in the bill. If we were to write regulation outside of that, then we'd be stepping outside of our role of executing the legislation.
So when it comes to courses like AP Business or Personal Finance, that would not be applicable for this regulation.
That depends on, and I've been in conversation with the College Board, it depends on whether or not they meet the requirements of Regulation 505, which would be does it have a half credit's worth of personal finance instruction aligned to our financial literacy standards? So basically, the formula in Regulation 505 is time and content standards, right? And so time is 135 hours for a full credit, 67 and a half for a half credit, right? So they would have to have at least 67 and a half hours of that AP business with personal finance. 67 and a half hours of that course must be aligned to our state's personal finance standards. The syllabus from the College Board that was shared with me, personal finance was the portion of personal finance in that course was up to 40 hours, which is below the time requirements, and we haven't even looked at the content skill requirements, right? So in that case, that could be if a kid took that and the course wound up aligning to the Carnegie unit and the content standards, that could count as an elective credit, right? In that bucket.
Any other questions from the board?
Just another comment. I think words matter, and oftentimes I think part of this issue, among the other things, is we're using financial literacy and personal finance interchangeably, and I'm not sure that they are. And so I think that that's going to cause some confusion, so
Yeah.
which may have already been addressed, but I don't know that it's been addressed at a high enough level. I think that's going to cause some other con I'm just concerned. And my concern is once this starts to happen, what happens to a student who now inadvertently doesn't meet the right standards and now they're denied graduation?
Yeah, that
And
would be
it,
the department to provide LEAs the guidance they need
yeah,
to
I
complete
just
their course.
I don't know if you've ever had to have those conversations. Those are not good. And right. And so to have those conversations around something debatable, I just have some concern. So.
Some board members. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. I know you went back to the drawing board on this one, so appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll move on to item C, public comment on regulations. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for public comment on regulations. Ms. French and Ms. Anderson, do we have anyone signed up for public comment?
Yes,
have a surprise for
For regulation. All right. So we will hear from speakers in the sign-up sheet who are present in the meeting room first, and then we'll recognize speakers logged in via the URL in that order that they've signed up. Comments should be limited to 2 minutes for individuals and three for organizations. Please note the board typically will not respond to questions or engage in dialogue with those offering comments during the board meeting. Who is the first name? Oh. All right. Hello. Good evening.
My name is Lisa Rice. I'm from Middletown. I am a severely disabled mother of a severely autistic son. I was trying to follow along with what you were saying about regulations for the early childhood teachers, and I didn't quite understand what you were saying, but I want to add something and let you know that there's a program called Project Impact. Two doctors formed it. I'm friends with one. Her name is Anna Dvorak, and it's a 13-week course that was provided by AIDuPont as a pilot program in 2019. And I took the course, and the education that I obtained was largely a big factor in me being able to catch my son. Everyone thought he was possibly deaf. And I was told through every professional in his life, not just school, that he had the mentality of an 18-month-old child, and that's the way it was going to stay. He's taken piano lessons, karate lessons. He sings. He goes to church. He knows the Bible. So it was pretty monumental. They have a three-tiered system of trainers. So I spoke with Anna about this. You guys could actually have all three tiers and could actually train the community and anyone in the public that is working with my kids. And insurance already covers it. So it could be a funding stream as well and just be good for all involved. Thanks.
So your comments. I think I saw the chat. There's one.
Yes, from Kendall Massett.
All right, Kendall Massett.
You can unmute yourself.
And now I can. Thank you. Good evening, Kendall Massett, Executive Director for the Delaware Charter Schools Network, making comment at this point on financial literacy regulations. To all of the members that made comments, your concerns are valid. I was part of a lot of the fights over the last 3 years. I do think this is better. And so kudos to the department for coming back with this and for listening to the comments that were made by myself and many others in the community. I will note that it's not perfect, and I am so concerned that there will be issues with implementation. I also note that the law does not say that financial literacy has to be part of one social studies credit. It's still just a half a credit. So you could just make it a half social studies credit. My concern is that if we keep it under one social studies credit, we're still going to have people linking it to a course that would take out civics or could affect world history. So we look forward to talking to the department more about their thoughts as we move forward. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is that everyone who signed up for regulation public comment?
Yes.
All right. We will move on to item five, the Secretary's report, and we have Secretary Martin.
Thank you. Bills to account for the Route 1 traffic on a Thursday afternoon before a 3-day weekend, so I apologize for being late. You do have my written report, but I like to sort of say it a little differently in the room here. This report you'll see is reflecting a theme that I think is showing up in basically every area of our work in education across the state. I think of it as Delaware's moving from planning to implementation. Implementation is everything. As Deb showed, she likes details. I like implementation. It's not knowing what to do or why to do it. It's knowing how to do it that makes a real difference. So what I'm seeing across Delaware, as I reflected in these the areas in the report, is a shift from talking about improvement,
in our schools to doing improvement and making it last. The public often sees the outcomes that we're pursuing. What I see every day are the educators, the school leaders, the families, community partners, all doing the hard implementation work that makes the outcomes possible. Over the past year, we've spent a lot of time building plans, engaging our stakeholders, establishing our priorities, and creating the conditions that are necessary for real systemic change that is durable and long-lasting. And increasingly, what I'm seeing is that our work is shifting from designing systems to putting those systems into actual practice. That's a theme as you read each part of my report. So one example is school funding. Following the PEFC's recommendations, Senate Bill 302 and 303 have advanced in the General Assembly, and they're positioning Delaware to begin implementing, there's my theme, a more student-centered funding system. The work is about more than a funding formula. Money at the end of the day does not solve everything. It's about how you implement. This work is about more than the funding formula. It is about creating a system that better aligns the resources with the flexibility that's needed to meet our students' needs while we're increasing the transparency, making sure the dollars are flexible, and holding everybody, including ourselves, accountable for the results and making them public as we go. We are seeing a similar transition in our work around artificial intelligence. Delaware's AI Assurance Lab was able recently to move from concept to pilot to implementation this month. Again, the theme, let's not just talk about it, let's be about it, let's do it. So what we did with that work is our educators, our tech leaders across the state, and reviewers tested real AI tools against Delaware's expectations for privacy, for ethics, for equity, and for learning, to not just accept vendor claims for vendor claims, but to really test it and vet it with the expertise that exists in the ecosystem. Earlier this week, I had the opportunity to share the work of Delaware's AI Assurance Lab, which we believe is the first in the country. I was able to share that before the US Senate Subcommittee on Families and Children at the invitation of Senator Blunt Rochester. And I was able to testify in a way that I could highlight our approach to show the country in this national setting how it's possible to ensure that AI serves students and educators in a way that's responsible and effective, and to not let fear be the thing that stops us, but not let excitement be the thing that makes us make mistakes. So be able to share the great work of our state moving forward. Implementation, again, is at the center of our literacy work. You see that in the report. A recent National Council on Teacher Quality report, NCTQ, you may have heard of, it recognized Delaware's efforts to align our educator preparation programs with evidence-based literacy instruction so we don't graduate students from college not knowing how to teach reading. That was part of the science of reading laws that were enacted before I came. At the same time, school and district leaders are participating in the AIM pathways and the letters training for administrators so that we can strengthen instructional leadership across the state. Again, more implementation. Together, these efforts are reflecting the simple goal that we all have, is that more Delaware children will be reading confidently and proficiently because the adults supporting them are well-prepared, well-trained, and it's aligned with what works. And then our educator workforce efforts continue to gain momentum as well. This month, 67 new apprentices joined Delaware's educator apprenticeship pathways, bringing the statewide total to 105 apprentices for the next school year. These programs are what we're doing to help build stronger pathways into the profession so that we can grow the talent from within our very own communities. And June also provided one of my favorite things, many opportunities to celebrate students. I attended 11 graduation ceremonies. You just heard about the one with the adult school. I went across Delaware and I had a chance to speak with students and families about what comes next. I asked graduates, what advice would you give to your younger self? If you haven't seen it on our social media, check it out. They have said the most amazing quotes. I think I should put them into like a little book and sell it at a Hallmark store or something, because they're amazing. Not I was going to say adorable. They're actually like wise beyond their years. They said things like work hard, take chances, build relationships, stay focused, believe in yourself. But they said way more articulately than that. Those are the headlines. The conversations basically for me served as this powerful reminder of what our goal is. It's not to simply just pass out diplomas. Our goal is to ensure that our students are leaving our schools prepared with purpose, with clarity, with confidence, with options to support whatever path they choose next. And we continue to see encouraging signs across our career-connected learning as well. Delaware students are earning national recognition through TSA and BPA competitions, while there's this new research that's helping us better understand which pathway experiences. I just forgot what TSA and BPA stands for, so don't ask me. It's in my thing, right?
Technology Student Association and Business Professionals of America.
Thank you. I had it in the report that I did it shorthand. This report is what's reinforcing the importance of how do you connect learning to actual real opportunities. And finally, we continue to invest in the conditions that help students thrive. This includes recognizing outstanding behavioral health professionals, expanding early learning opportunities. All of this is in the report. Examples of that, we supported transitions for children and families, maintaining Delaware's strong performance in FAFSA completion, and we're currently ranking among the top states in the nation in our FAFSA completion. All this taken together shows that I think they could be just a list of diverse efforts. I like to see patterns and trends. We have one strategic plan. I know you're working on that as a board. Our strategic plan with five building blocks, clear goals, clear outcomes, clear things that we measure, not a list of disconnected government activities. They're connected by a common purpose, whether we're talking about early learning, literacy, educator workforce development, student well-being, funding reform, artificial intelligence, career pathways, or college access. That's not a laundry list. We're working toward the same outcomes: stronger starts for children, stronger learning experiences in classrooms, stronger pathways after high school, and stronger public systems that earn the trust through results that are continuously reported. So thank you very much. I love June and I love being able to report on the great work in Delaware.
Thank you, Secretary Martin. Questions for the Secretary? I just want to applaud you for the work on the funding formula. I know that this was a long road to get, and I know that it still has one final step, but I think it's going to be such a win for our schools. So congratulations. I know it goes to so many people, the legislators, the governor, you, educators, education advocates, the PEFC, but it's really encouraging to see folks come together behind an approach. And I know it's going to take further implementation, but I'm incredibly encouraged and myself very hopeful that it gets through the finish line.
Thank you, President Sheehan. It was amazing to be where we are. One more vote away is true, but to also, I don't remember if I put it in my report, but that the legislature already gave a signal that they're funding it, putting $100 million down payment on it, that we're not waiting. And many states pass funding formulas without the funding. They have the formula, but they don't have the funding. I had personal experience with that in California when they passed their weighted formula years ago. And it took 3 years to pass a statewide proposition to fund it. The formula was done and people were very excited about it, but it wasn't funded. This legislature already, before it's even finished with the votes, put $100 million down payment on it. It will cost more than that, but that is a major signal that Delaware is ready to have something be flexible and support our students and our educators.
Other questions or comments for the Secretary?
Just a quick comment. Once again, I applaud you for the work with CTE. I'll reiterate my thoughts earlier this year. January through May is conference season. If you have the opportunity to, please go see our CTE students and the amazing things that they're doing. If you look at some of these websites, their projects, their presentations, these are better than honestly professionally done projects. So if you have the opportunity to, the vast majority of them, you get to engage with over 1,000 students within the conference. Go see for yourself the amazing things that our students are doing.
Love it.
Excellent. Great. Thank you, Secretary Martin. We will move on to item six, State Board Business. Item 6A, legislative update during legislative session. We have this item on our agenda to give board members an opportunity to ask questions and raise discussion items about education-related bills. We have Donna Harris-Akins, Associate Secretary for Government and External Affairs, to provide information. Welcome.
Thank you. And actually, they're still across the street. So I'm watching my text messages to make sure I didn't have to run back over there. I'm not going to go through the list. You have my written report updated as of last night. But a couple of things I did want to mention. The Secretary already mentioned the uber good news, the $100 million that's been set aside for PEFC implementation or for the PEFC formula. And in the budget bill that passed the House, still needs to move to the House, passed the Senate, still needs to move to the House side. There is money for or at least the initial plug of money for the implementation of the whole system that needs to happen here at the Department of Ed. So we already are starting to build work teams around that work, but there are systems changes, fiscal systems changes that need to happen. And so that initial plug of money has been is in the budget bill that is working its way through the General Assembly as we speak. We do expect the PEFC bills to be in the House on the floor next week. And we do not have a date, but happy to let you all know when we find out. And before I get asked, the student member proposal that was discussed at the last couple of meetings started having conversations with the governor's office. I do not expect any issues with it being on our policy agenda for the next session. And I recognize that we also have we have a time limit in that space because the applications go out at a certain point and then decisions get made at a certain point. So we want that signed before that process, the end of that process happens. So we will work that out as well. That is it.
Questions from the board? All right, thank you so much. We will move on to item 6B, preliminary FY27 budget items. So the board will have a discussion and approve its full budget at the July meeting after the governor signs the FY27 budget bill, but the Department of Education financial process timelines require pre-approval for a few line items in the budget that have July 1 start date or July 1 payment due date. This, we voted on a few of these items earlier, but this also includes the state board's membership in the National Association for State Boards of Education. So keeping in mind that we will discuss the full budget in July once signed by the governor, this is an item that we need to approve, should the board see it that way. So we have that one item, the NASD membership. So I would open it up for a motion and then discussion on the motion. Is there a motion to approve the FY27 preliminary budget item as presented?
So moved.
Motion by Board Member Simmons. Is there a second?
Stevens, second.
Second by Vice President Stevens. Is there discussion on the NASB membership item?
I think I'd like to make just a comment to give some context to some of our newer members. This was raised, I believe it was during the budgetary process early on, of whether or not we should continue our NASB membership due to the amount of money that is required to continue the membership and whether we were seeing enough return on our investment to maintain the membership. But since that was initially brought up, we've seen a significant change in the composition of the board. And so what I'm wondering is whether we should look to continue our membership for another year, allowing some of our newer members to experience what NASB has to offer for us, and then making the decision again next year as to whether or not we continue our affiliation with NASB.
In my opinion, that's a reasonable approach. I think a few of us are going to the new member institute, so I almost don't know what I don't know
right
at this point.
This conversation, that as Vice President Stevens has said, has come up a number of times here, but I remember having this conversation annually as a local board member about the DSBA. And I think that the calculation that any board is always going to have to weigh is what is our expectation from these professional memberships. In my interactions on the committee that I served on in PEP, we do get exposure to things that are happening around the country. One of the things that I think makes our membership in NASB unique is that other state boards of education have much more input into what's happening in education in their states than this board does. So a lot of the conversations that are being had at NASB, while they are greatly informative, they don't necessarily inform the work that we're doing. That doesn't mean that they're not valuable to us. So I think that continuing for another year allows board members, if we don't have, we've had some turnover in the last year. So my concern about doing that is if life's and we have the same kind of turnover, do we say the same thing again next year? Let's continue it for another year while we make the determination. It may be something that we consider as we are looking at strategic planning. How does that align with who we are determining ourselves and the path of the board to be going forward?
To piggyback in, when I joined the board, my introduction to NASB was similar, like what's our bang for a buck? And I think that because of the conversations that we had here, my interaction with NASB to say, what are we getting for this? And two, Dr. Griffin's point around the state's doing it differently, I've challenged Paolo and his team to say, to put me with a group or to put Delaware, when I represent Delaware, with a group that has different authority doesn't make sense. And so they're even looking at to say, and I think I explained this before, they're tiering the states. I think there's three tiers to say that these tiers have this level of authority. So I think the conversations have been much more valuable since they've done that, because for me to talk about policies, for lack of a word, that this board doesn't have the authority to discuss because it's locally controlled doesn't make sense. So grouping us in those tiers has been at least a response to some of the debates that we had on what is our level of expectations from NASB. For the new members, I did attend New Member Institute when I became a new member. And my comment then was, I felt like I was being presented to school leaders and not school board members. And since then, again, they've adjusted to say, to take that feedback, to try to address those things. So I think moving forward with another year gives our new members a chance to gain some evidence, research, whatever, to be able to weigh in to stay or to go.
One thing I know we've had conversations about before that I want to reiterate again for the future of when this does become a broader conversation, whether or not the board chooses to stay or leave NASB, there needs to be some form of partial membership for the student member of the State Board of Ed. I understand that the programming that you have may be very different than what mine looks like, but there's only 24 students in the United States that understand what I'm doing and how I'm processing things. When we're having these meetings weekly, as we do meet every week, they are the only people that I can talk to say, this is coming up within my board. What does it look like within your state? Being able to have them have the NASB staff as guides to lead policy discussions between the student members of the State Board of Ed, being able to go in person and looking at our board's priorities for the years. Your experience with NASB, of course, is always going to look very different than mine. However, it is crucial for the success of the student member to be a part of NASB and to be in those conversations and to be at those roundtables every single month.
That was a good conversation. I think that's something we need to continue monitoring. Any other thoughts, discussion items from folks? All right, we had a motion by, I believe, Board Member Simmons, seconded by Vice President Stevens. All those in favor of continuing or voting to approve this measure, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, motion carries. We will move on to item C, and we will start with this is committee and meeting reports. So in a moment, we'll have an opportunity to discuss board priorities, but first there's an opportunity for members to provide information in written reports made available on eBoard on any events or committee meetings that ended since the last meeting. And we will start with C1, bittersweet, our final student member report. Yeah.
Mr. President, Madam Secretary, members of the board, on July 17th, 2025, I stood before you for the first time as Delaware's 8th student member of the State Board of Education. Today, just as I have every month since then, I stand before you once again to deliver my report. However, today's report looks a little different. Today's report is not a reflection on the last 30 days. It's not a summary of meetings attended or events participated in. Instead, it is a reflection of a year of service, a year of learning, and a year spent representing more than 131,000 students across the state of Delaware. On June 13th, 2025, a phone call changed my world in an instant. I had been appointed as the next student member of the Delaware State Board of Education. Days later, I raised my right hand and swore an oath to the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the State of Delaware, and to faithfully serve the students I have been entrusted to represent. Ever since that day, the work began. Over the course of this year, I have visited more than 30 schools throughout Delaware, engaged with more than 30,000 students across Delaware, surveyed more than 3,000 students, attended every state Board of Education meeting, served as student commissioner on the Public Education Funding Commission, participated in Delaware's AI Assurance Lab Steering Committee, and represented Delaware students both across our state and across our nation. But statistics only tell one part of the story. The most meaningful part of my term has been hearing directly from students. And so today I want to tell you what Delaware students are saying. After visiting schools across all three counties, I can tell you this with confidence. Delaware students are speaking. The question is whether we are listening. First, students told me they want expanded career pathways and college readiness opportunities. Second, they spoke about mental health, stress, burnout, and the need for additional support. Third, students raised concerns about growing class sizes and access to individualized support. And finally, students emphasized the importance of greater investment in schools, resources, technology, and extracurricular opportunities. This feedback did not come from one school, one district, or one conversation. These themes emerged again and again across Delaware. And perhaps most importantly, students told me that they want a seat at the table. Throughout this year, I have learned that students are not just participants in our education system, they are our primary stakeholders. When given a meaningful seat at the table, they do more than identify challenges. They become partners in creating solutions. This year also brought opportunities to contribute to important work on behalf of Delaware students through the Public Education Funding Commission and Delaware's AI Assurance Lab Steering Committee, ensuring student voices remain part of the conversation about educational funding, innovation, and the future of public education. As I prepare to leave my seat, I find myself often thinking about the next student who will soon occupy it. To Delaware's ninth student member, who you will soon meet, I offer a few pieces of advice. Be confident, be prepared, speak up, remember that you are still a student and you can have fun, but above all, remember your oath. Remember that your oath is not to a person, it is not to the president of the board, the secretary of education, or even the governor himself. Your oath is to the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the State of Delaware, and to the students who have entrusted you to serve. You will not always agree with those around you, and that is okay. Your responsibility is not to echo the opinions of others. Your responsibility is to faithfully represent Delaware students and ensure their voices are heard. As the board reconvenes in the months ahead, I will begin my next chapter at Hampton University, where I will study international relations and political science while participating in the Naval Reserve Officers Training Corps as I prepare to become a future officer in the United States Navy. As I leave my seat today, I do so with my head held high, not because every challenge was solved, but because I gave this role my all. Representing Delaware students has been the greatest responsibility and privilege of my life. I came to this board believing that my job was to give students a voice. I leave this board knowing that Delaware students are already given a voice. My job was simply to make sure it was heard. I've also been fortunate to learn from exceptional public servants, educators, policymakers, and leaders throughout my journey. The lessons I have learned from serving alongside all of you will remain with me long after my term concludes. Thank you to Governor Meyer for the opportunity to serve. Thank you to my fellow board members, Department of Education staff, educators, administrators, legislators, and community leaders for your support throughout my journey. And most importantly, thank you to Delaware students. It has been the honor of a lifetime to serve you. May you always innovate boldly, may your excellence forever be recognized, and may your impact always be undeniable. Thank you, may God bless you, and may God bless the students and educators of our beloved First State. And that is my report.
I know we all went around before, but I'll just reiterate, I think what Jim said rings true, that you not only did this job and went to all these meetings, but it was a job very well done.
Thank you.
So who wants to follow Tyler?
I suggest that you submit that to the governor as well, so he can hear or also forward it if you'd like.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I had one update. I was fortunate enough with board member Simmons to attend We Rise Wednesday at Lewis Dual Language in Wilmington. And it's a program that they've created in kind of partnership with the Wilmington Learning Collaborative, where on Wednesdays, students are exposed to really exciting and engaging activities. We saw chess, we saw soccer, we saw coding, and educators take that time and they get together and they pour over student data, they collaborate, and it was amazing to see it in action. I think it's what, as we worked on the Wilmington Learning Collaborative together, what like was envisioned, allowing teachers the chance to create programs and innovate. And what was also really interesting was they showed at the attendance data, and on Wednesdays is when they have their highest average daily attendance, like 94%, which was the highest of the 5 days. So I don't know if they're listening or will hear this, but just a huge congratulations to those educators, to Principal Romano. It was really wonderful to see our educators innovating and building something really special. And it's starting to then spread across. So I think Highland or Joseph Johnson has something like that, and they're starting to take a version of this across the city and hopefully more. So job well done by those folks.
Yeah, it was well done in other schools too. President Sheehan's are starting to do the same thing as well. They piloted, Lewis piloted it on this last half of last year, but the important part that he left out is that it was all teacher generated. So this was a plan that came out of teacher innovation, presented it to Principal Romano, and they got it up and running. So job well done. And I know that Secretary Martin mentioned the AI stuff that we're dealing with in our state, but when Kathleen resigned, I was asked to replace her on NASD's EdTech Council. And the topic solely right now is screen time.
Oh, yeah.
And what different states are doing around screen time.
Yes.
In the last meeting, I think it was last Monday, we really broke down, like, one, are we defining screen time the same across all the different states? What's the pushback? Because the pushback from screen time from a student perspective is different than it is from parent perspectives. And then what's the pushback on schools? Because they want it to be able to leverage, I'm going to use snow days as an example. We have the opportunity to use the technology so that students can make up that time during, but they don't want to lose their phones, which is really the thing. So my conversation was, are we really talking about educational technology, or are we talking about cell phones? And I don't know that anybody can completely answer that question, because I think it depends on who you're asking the question to. So more to follow. I was hesitant to jump on the committee, but I'm glad that I did, because it's been enlightening to be able to share that. And so I think also having the high school principal lens helps, right? So.
Well, you've probably seen my report, but I just want to follow up. In addition to the meeting that was held last week with the DPAS 2 Advisory Committee, which is currently taking a look at current Delaware law regarding the evaluation system and making changes to Title 14, Chapter 12, Sections 1270 through 1275, which reflects both DPAS 2 for your specialists, as well as DTGSS. That section of the law has not been revised in a while and does not currently reflect current practice. And so the DPAS 2 Advisory Committee has been going through this and making recommendations for change. We have a meeting scheduled next week to finalize whether the committee approves or disapproves the changes as made before they are forwarded on to the department, with the hope that this will be taken up during the next legislative session and finally be put into effect. They are also reviewing regulations 106A, 107A, and 108A, which covers teacher, specialist, and administrator evaluations. And again, making the same changes so that those regulations reflect current practice around educator evaluation. But attached to that, today, there was a meeting of the Student Improvement Component Task Force. We are a group of people that have been meeting now. Oh, Michael's smiling because he knows he started out with us. We have been meeting for 18 months to make recommendations and changes to the student improvement component of the current teacher evaluation system, taking a strong look at the goal setting process and what supports will be provided to educators in terms of structuring goals that are fair, that are reasonable and achievable, and that are going to lead to the improvement of education for students. There was a process that was piloted this year. Today, we reviewed the data that came back, and some reoccurring themes were that when you've got 25% of educators that participated in the pilot saying they weren't sure they had gotten training, that was indicative to us that we need to be doing, once again, a little bit more around the area of training so that indeed people know they've been trained, but also that the training is of high enough quality that they are ready to go when they hit the ground running with the goal setting process. Another recommendation that came forward as part of the group was that it would be beneficial to have templates created so that educators can readily see what a good goal looks like and to have that available to them, as well as a well-structured monitoring process so that throughout the year, and particularly for specialists who sometimes are only seen once a year, that throughout the year they're getting feedback regarding the implementation, there's your word, regarding the implementation of the practices they say will support continued student growth. It was a very, very valuable discussion that we had today. The program is moving into another stage of piloting. A number of districts have already signed on next year for the pilot. This includes both districts as well as charter schools. And so we'll be seeing positive outcomes. We were really pleased to see chose to participate for a second year. They are the only group from last year's pilot that said, yes, they'd like to be part of the second year of the pilot program. We also have schools from Milford, Woodbridge, Academia is also participating, Del Mar. And so we're excited to see where the second year goes to get the feedback. We move into statewide implementation the year after. So we'll be taking all of that information and looking hopefully to come up with a final product that is going to be beneficial to all of the educators here in the state and will really strongly contribute to student improvement. So that's where we are with that. And that's my report.
Any other comments from board members? All right, we'll move on to item D, priorities discussion. Each regular meeting agenda will have a specific portion aligned for our five board priorities, plus an opportunity for discussion on initiatives. I just had one flag of something that I think we just talked about a few meetings ago that I'd love us to pick back up at some point, which is the idea of an online archive of best practices that are going on across the state as an opportunity for us to sort of be a clearinghouse for the great things that are going on. I think it was actually Dr. Mayanucci who had proposed this idea initially, and I was thinking about it last meeting when we had the two chronic absenteeism presentations, which I thought were outstanding, that I would love for us to consider at a future meeting voting to formally create something, and we'll need to obviously do the work. And then I think it also goes to a conversation at a meeting soon about we record our meetings as we're required to do. We do an audio recording, which I just think is not what other boards do. I think most boards do a YouTube recording, or at least record the Zoom and post the Zoom. And I wonder how much more effective a presentation like that on chronic absenteeism would be if folks could actually watch the presentation versus listening. So nothing for action at all at this meeting, but I just wanted to kind of re-up the proposal that you had, Dr. Marinucci, and then also say that I would love for us to have a conversation at a future time about the fact that we post an audio recording of our meetings, and I'm not sure that that is, I'll speak for myself, I consume information better if I'm watching the meeting rather than just listening to an audio. Any other priorities, items from anyone?
Just one item regarding strategic planning. We have created a subcommittee to network with Peggy Geisler's group to begin the process of discussing what the strategic planning process will look like for us going forward. So I would like to thank my colleagues, Dr. Griffin and Dr. Marinucci, for agreeing to work with me to be part of this subcommittee. Peggy contacted me today and had sent some dates, but they're not workable. So I will be in contact with her to get some additional dates so that hopefully we can get the subcommittee meeting with her sometime early next month, start building out the contract, and then move forward with strategic planning with our group.
So thank you to three of you for being willing to serve. Any other items for folks?
I was just going to say, once you get started on it, I'm happy to present to Peggy and the group that you've heard the strategic plan for the department, but if you want to kick off your meeting with me outlining it, so I'm happy to do that, but it might be redundant because you've heard it all already, but I offer my services if they're helpful. Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. All right. At this point, we'll move on to item 7, formal public comment. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for general public comment. Ms. French, is there anyone signed up for public comment?
Yes, sir. We have several.
Okay, a reminder again, we're here for speakers and the sign-up sheets who are present in the meeting room in person first, and unrecognized speakers logged in via the URL in the order they have signed up in the chat box. Comments should be limited to 2 minutes for individuals, 3 minutes for organizations. As a reminder, the board typically will not respond to questions or engage in a dialogue with those offering comment during the board meeting. Welcome again.
Hi. Thank you. I'm Lisa Rice from Middletown, Delaware, and I'm here to represent disabled children. I want to take this opportunity because I've been at Legislative Hall quite a bit, and there is a lot of legislation regarding school funding and property taxes, and there's a lot going on that I support. But that being said, since the money has not arrived yet, and we know that it's going to be coming potentially annually, I just want to remind everybody about severely disabled and or blind children and that we could do something for them in a meaningful way. Parents are still saying the same stuff about the IEP process. I'm practically a lawyer now because I wanted my son to have extended school services. I got a booklet of safeguards that was 19 pages long, and I had to look up every little code. It represented 468 pages of Delaware law. I just wanted my son to have extended school services. And that alone is still a problem as well. And it's a meaningful way to help these kids. With AI, I'm not an expert, but from what I've seen with case study analysis, that it is helpful. It's helpful with literacy. Getting into AI, if it's going to be replacing teachers, if there's a shortage. We want special education teachers that are licensed and certified. And we do not want paras being thrown into situations that they themselves do not want to be in either. Regarding the IEPs, the summer's done. I'm going to get very helpful. Parents like I did as well, they're still complaining about the same things, that the districts are not believing in their kids and their kids' abilities, and they feel like their children are being dumbed down. And they might be right, because through all the transition programs we have in high schools, what end up happening most of the time is that these kids aren't, they're never leaving their parents' house and they're never going to be employed. So we just have to do something better in little ways for these people. It's
Sorry, this is so hard. It took me 6 years to get to you guys. I was yelling at you in 2021 if you were here, so my apologies. We also want to know, is spelling and grammar mandatory? Because we're concerned about the literacy rates, and there's grade school kids right now that have a 1% grade level for literacy. And so, that being said, the reason why I wanted to come to you so bad 5 years ago, I had Bob Schultz, he's the autism research director at CHOP. Anna Batt from University of Delaware, she's a researcher for autism, outdoor learning, equine assisted learning. We were going to come to you. I had 1,400 case study analysis to ask you to do a statewide community statewide, school-wide community stakeholder curriculum change proposal. See? So the reason why is because art, music, outdoor learning, equine-assisted programs are extremely effective for children with literacy, math, academics, behavior, parent-child relationships, social skills, speech, and cognitive abilities. Thank you.
Thank you, sorry, so much. One other speaker there is?
Oh, we got Kendall Massett.
Okay, Kendall Massett.
Good evening. Kendall Massett, Executive Director for the Delaware Charter Schools Network. I'm sorry I'm not there in person. One of the things I'm going to tell you about is the reason why I'm not. But first, I want to begin with President Sheehan. Don't reinvent the wheel. We've actually already started working on best practices being curated on a website through a sub-grant with the dissemination of best practices from the last charter school program grant. I'm happy to sit and talk with you. We've done focus groups with families and educators. It's about all schools, district and charter. Now, the next part is I tried to be like the secretary. I only went to five graduations, two of which with her, but they were wonderful. And the joy to be seen in a graduation is just a wonder. And if you haven't been to all these graduations, you should go next year. Second, and the reason why I can't be down there, today we did an AI summer camp with EPSCoR, which is a program that UD actually is the fiscal agent for. But it's myself, the network worked along with University of Delaware, Delaware State University, and Goldie Beacon College, as well as Red Clay, on creating a summer camp, a 4-day summer camp around AI. One of the attendees is actually sitting at the back of the room right now. That today at 1 o'clock, I got to see them present a showcase, four different showcases of what they learned over the last 3.5 days. It was amazing. And I am even more excited about the possibilities for our students as we move forward. And then this last week, we did our IDEA Awards. Michelle Marinucci has been there in the past, so she knows innovation, dedication, education, admiration. Those happened this year a little bit differently. We did it outside in really, really, really hot weather, but we had a lot of fun and we celebrated our community. And that brings me to community here. I want to lift up my thanks to the Department of Education for working with me in community for the whole community. Obviously, the funding formula is a big piece, but there have been many projects that I have been included in with the Department of Education to do great things for all kids. And I'm grateful for the work that the department has put forward. I know sometimes it doesn't feel like you're seen. I see you, DOE, and I am grateful for you because 141,000 students. Not just the 19,050 that I advocate for, but 141,000 students depend on you. And that also goes for all of you at the state board. Those students depend on you. Dr. Griffith, you may not feel like you have a lot of say in what happens in education, but you absolutely do. And my grateful thanks goes to all of you. This is what community does. We have shared values and beliefs and possibilities for outcomes for our students. And finally, Tyler, as you're going to the Navy, bravo Zulu. You are indeed an incredible student and human being, and I am proud to be your advocate. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Massett. All right, move on to item 8, adjournment. Our next regular meeting is... Okay, before we depart, I want to thank Erin for all her support. I want to thank Peggy for all her support. I want to thank Linnea for all her support. We will have our executive director starting, I believe, July 6th. So we are thrilled to welcome Justin Richards and know he will do a phenomenal job. So congratulations, Justin, and thank you again to everyone who, above and beyond their regular duties, have supported us. We really, really appreciate it.
I want to add on to that, what you all did during this transition was truly remarkable. You stepped up above and beyond. You're already completely full plate. So I know that when you have a full plate, we just have to sort of turn it in for a platter and keep on going. But thanks for everything you did. It means a lot to us.
Our next regular meeting is July 16th in the Townsend Building here in Dover. Is there a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting?
So moved, Stevens.
Motion by Vice President Stevens. Is there a second?
Marinucci, second.
Second by Dr. Marinucci. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. It is 6:36 p.m. and we are adjourned.
That.